FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's Carrie Lutz, and boy, leadership, something that often appears all too lacking in our society today, in our country, in our world. What makes a great leader? How can you become a great leader? That's what you need to be thinking of. If you're in a big business, a small business, regardless what the industry might be, you need to have leadership skills if you are running a company. And often those skills are not what you might think they would be. And that's why Dr. Bill Oxier is with us now. You're probably familiar with him. He's written several books. Bill, you wrote Masters of Success and To Lead, Follow. And Bill, we couldn't be more happy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Carrie. Thanks for letting me talk to you about one of my favorite topics, leadership.
Yeah. So would you agree that we have a dearth of leadership, whether it's political or business or government? It doesn't matter. Leadership is often lacking in all levels of society.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, everyone thinks about leadership in a different way. And, you know, if you Google the definition of leadership, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of different definitions. So leadership is one of those words that everybody talks about but has a different meaning of. And because of that, there's no consistency on what truly effective leadership is. And that creates a great deal of confusion. And in today's turbulent times, there's never been a greater call or a greater need for more effective leadership.
Yeah. And would you agree that leaders aren't born, that they're made?
In fact, I wrote an article one time about a myth busting, because I would say that the concept of the natural born leader is one of the biggest myths of all of leadership. You know, there are some people that have more of a natural tendency to step into a leadership role, but every great leader is constantly evolving and becoming better at becoming a more effective leader.
And when you think of leaders, obviously, you're a leader. You've spoken and worked with countless leaders and read about them. Who do you think of when you think of leaders, effective leaders? Give us a few.
Well, in my latest book, To Lead, Follow, that book basically is a tribute to my dad, of all people. And, you know, there were times in my life when I thought my dad was like Superman, and there were times in my life when I thought my dad was the dumbest guy in the world.
Yeah.
But he instilled in me my core values, which shaped my philosophical foundation of leadership. So, you know, we all have important people in our lives that have influenced us, whether it's family members or teachers or whatever. But some of the great people I think about, one of my heroes is Abraham Lincoln. In today's times, Marshall Goldsmith, who I count as a friend, he's written a lot of New York Times best-selling books about leadership. He's a great leader. So, I mean, we all have role models or examples in our lives, you know, some from the past of history, some from the present, some family, some non-family.
Yeah. Yeah, I think of my father, too, and he ran a business, was always in business for himself whole life. He was effective because I guess he was successful, but he definitely had his failings. He could have for certain profited by your book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's I remember Charles Barkley one time when he was still an active basketball player. You know, he said that, "I don't want to be a role model." Well, the problem is you don't have a choice of whether you're a role model or not. You don't have a choice if you're going to influence someone's leadership skills. So, I mean, you learn by the good examples, but you also learn by the bad examples because you tell yourself, well, I'm never going to do that when I get in a leadership role because of a bad example of a leader that you've experienced or witnessed.
And, you know, in the Army, when they have a bad leader or the way that the armed services work, in this country and around the world, I would say, they have a thing called management without leadership. And that's something that's really plaguing the country and the world, isn't it?
Yeah, because you have to have somebody to provide direction. But, you know, my favorite definition of leadership, I had the privilege of meeting and listening to Jim Collins, the author of Good to Great, a couple of years ago. He's a great speaker. And he shared his favorite definition of leadership, with which I bear no bones about it. I've totally stolen it from him because I love it so much. And he says that leadership is what happens when people follow when they don't have to. And that, I think, is a great, great definition of leadership, because too many people, you know, whether it's the military, whether it's a business or whatever, you know, they want to be a leader because it gives them power. And it does give them power. But if you are always coercing people to follow when the tough times come, that you may find yourself without any followers.
Yeah. And so some people think that leadership is basically kind of being paternalistic to your employees, Bill, to your people you're working with, really caring and, you know, just being like a pseudo parent, if you will. But in business that and in life, that doesn't work out too well most of the time, does it?
Well, in the wrong situation, that type of leadership skill would fail miserably. But whereas in other situations, it would be wonderful. You know, so I am a big believer in situational leadership, where the context of the issue that you're facing or the task at hand and the people that are assigned to achieve those tasks, that, you know, you need to implement different leadership styles. I am a firm believer that one leadership style does not fit all. And that is that I've seen that too many times where, you know, whoever's in charge, they make it take a stand and say, well, that's the way I am. They can either take it or leave it. And they surround themselves with people who are willing to take it. But that's not effective leadership. And that may work for a short period of time. And that might get you through a crisis. But people are not willing to put up with the cost of dealing with a one-size-fits-all leadership style.
Right. And I think many of you have problem finding the proper leadership style that works with your personality. What's the best way of settling that?
You know, I think that what I do when I work with leaders one-on-one to help them become more effective, I do what I try to help them become a skilled leader. And that's S-C-I-L-D, a skilled leader. And what that evolves around is stakeholder-centered, individualized leadership development. And so the premise there is that no one knows you better than the people that you work with. In other words, your stakeholders know you better than anyone. And they can tell you what your strengths are, and they can tell you what your weaknesses are. And by getting feedback from your stakeholders, that allows you to see yourself more clearly, to truly see if what you think your strengths are, your stakeholders are in agreement with. If what you see as your weaknesses are, see if you're in agreement with what your stakeholders tell you. And I would say 99.9% of the time, there is never perfect alignment between a leader and his or her stakeholders. So by working through that process with stakeholder feedback, in collaboration with the person I'm working with, we develop an action plan, identify some behaviors that he or she wants to change, put together an action plan. And we do that based on stakeholder feedback, which continues throughout the engagement. And it's amazing the change that a leader can implement through this process, and how much more effective they can become over time, because let's face it, change is hard. It's very hard. And especially if it's a habit that you have or a behavior that you have that is second nature to you, there's nothing harder. If change were easy, the weight loss industry wouldn't be the billion-dollar industry that it is today. So change is difficult. And the more you can have someone such as myself or another person to help you engage with your stakeholders, the more effective you can evolve as a leader.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a good formula because, as we said, you're not born a leader, you're made a leader. And a feedback process where you're evaluating and identifying areas for growth, as well as areas where you're doing well, really makes a big difference.
Yeah, and the stakeholder feedback is so important on that, because the reason being is that as a leader, let's say I think I've got a habit that I need to change, so I work constantly on changing that habit. It's just like if you're a golfer and you go out and you're practicing over and over again on something in your swing that actually you're practicing the wrong thing. So if you keep practicing doing the wrong thing over and over again, the only result you're going to get is that you're going to be very good after a while at doing the wrong thing. So that's why it's important to have this input from your stakeholders, and an outside observer, if you will, is the ideal scenario to help you change the right things to become more effective.
Yeah. And what about in your family, leading your family? This formula work for that as well?
Absolutely. You know, it's and family experiences can be very humbling, as can all of life experiences. But, you know, one of the habits that I like to talk about, a bad habit actually, is adding too much value. And, you know, what I found is that, you know, it's important to know what good habits look like or good traits look like for a leader, but it's also just as important to know what the bad ones are so you can avoid them or catch yourself doing them. And adding too much value is when you always add to a conversation by telling somebody else what they need to do, regardless of whether they want that input or not. So I have countless examples of how I've added too much value to my children and my wife and their life, and it's never appreciated. And the problem is it gives them a loss. They're less willing to interact with you if you're always adding value, because they don't want to hear what you have to say when they've got an idea of their own and something that you want to do. And the same holds true in the business world or any other organization for that matter. So adding value unsolicited is one of those habits that I quite often work with leaders to try to help them overcome them.
So sometimes the best course of action is just to keep your mouth shut, in other words.
Exactly.
It's a little bit of a euphemism there for, and as parents, you're only too inclined to issue a lecture rather than really listening to what your child's saying and leading in that respect. So hey, when we return, Bill, I want to just cover with you three things you can start doing right now to improve your leadership skills and qualities on the Financial Survival Network. And we're here with Dr. Bill Axier, a noted author and expert in management, what it takes to be successful, how to avoid the pitfalls. And Bill, tell us three things we could do today as managers that you could do and make a difference in your skills and your success rate as a manager.
Sure. Thanks, Kerry, for giving me the opportunity to do that. You know, right before the break, we were talking about one of the habits of adding too much value as being a habit that is not good for a leader. So again, adding too much value means that you add to a conversation by telling others what they need to do, regardless of whether they want that input or not. So anytime someone presents an idea and you say to them, well, that's a great idea, but it would be better if you did this, or, you know, when I worked at another company, we did something like that, but here's what we found that worked, which would be make your idea better. Again, the problem with adding too much value is, indeed, you may improve that idea a little bit, but you're going to lower the commitment of that person to execute by a much greater amount because it takes away ownership. It creates a loss of commitment. So if you catch yourself adding to a person's idea by adding more value, just take a time out and add value by simply saying, that's a great idea, and stop at that. Keep your mouth shut. Because effective leaders, they're the smartest person in the room when they're surrounded by a group of winners. And that's what you can do by not adding too much value.
Yeah.
Another thing you can do is eliminate the words no, but, and however from your vocabulary. When I was first starting out in my career in a leadership role, I had a great mentor who told me a story that's stuck with me all through the years. He said that anytime you're giving someone feedback in particular, and whatever you said to them in the beginning, you know, Kerry, you're doing a great job. I love the way you put this format together for this broadcast, but...
Thank you. I don't like buts.
Whatever I say after the word but, well, I might as well have jumped up and stuck my butt right in your face because no matter how beautiful that butt might be or how ugly that butt might be,
true.
I guarantee you, when you've got a butt in your face, you're not listening to anything that's being said after that.
Or how true it might be, because the truth is irrelevant because it's not your truth that you're dealing with. It's your employees or your subordinate, and you're trying to bring about a desired result, enhance the positive. And when you use that but qualifier, I know when I hear it, it's like, all right, this is mildly veiled or not so mildly veiled criticism.
Absolutely. All another person hears is that they're wrong about something and they're not listening or they're going to go on the defensive. So simply by eliminating the words no, but, and however from your vocabulary when you're talking to other people, that would be a help. And I always like to issue this challenge on this. For 1 week, keep track of your fellow coworkers' use of the words no, but, and however. So if you can overhear someone talking at your workplace, or you can even do it at home, whatever, and you write down the person's name and just put a dash by their name every time they use the word no, but, or however, I guarantee you're going to be surprised how many times they use that word, those words. And so then after you've done that for a week, do the same thing for yourself. Keep track of how many times you say no, but, or however, and you'll be surprised. So that'll help you realize how much of an issue that may or may not be with you, but help you address that.
I like that. And your third suggestion.
My third suggestion is it's a common theme that I see all the time with leaders, and that's the desire to win too much. You know, our country is based on the concept of winning. We all love to win, and most people who have worked themselves up into a leadership role are winners. And winning is good. There's no doubt about it. It's part of our culture. It's important. The problem is when you want to win all the time, you want to win at all costs. You want to win when it matters, and you want to win when it doesn't matter. And that's the problem, wanting to win when it doesn't matter. The habit of winning too much. And, you know, it does help you get to the top, but it's also a problem when you want to win too much. I mean, you talked about family examples. I can share countless family examples of how my desire to win too much has gotten in the way of my relationships with my spouse or my kids or whatever. Wanting to win too much is a mutation of the desire to win that can limit your success as a leader.
Yeah. So Vince Lombardi's saying winning isn't the main thing, it's the only thing, has to be tempered a bit.
It has to be contextualized, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, and when, like you said, win-win accounts. Don't just win for the sake of winning, because you'll often wind up a loser in the long run as a result of being short-sighted and not having your priorities straight. So, anyway, Bill, we got to conclude now, but tell us where we find you, how we connect with you on the internet, books, how we purchase them.
Well, thank you again, Kerry, for having me as a guest. My latest book, To Lead Follow, I'm proud to say it is won a literary award as well as being a bestseller, and you can get that on Amazon.com, and the name of the book again is To Lead Follow. And you can also visit my website, which is Bill Auxier, B-I-L-L-A-U-X-I-E-R, BillAuxier.com. And in fact, there's if you go to my website, there's a place where you can sign in, and I'll send you a free white paper on 20 habits that will hold you back from the top. So that would be my gift to you, and thank you for listening to me and checking out my website.
Hey, Bill, it's been an absolute pleasure. And as always, we will have a link to Bill's website in the show notes to this interview. While you're at financialsurvivalnetwork.com, take a look at the extensive articles that are posted. Our webinar, our webmaster rather, Stefan, spends literally hours every day finding you the most relevant articles that are going to help you succeed in the new economy. And don't forget, November 5th, 2 days from now, we're going to have a webinar on how to pay off your mortgage in 5 to 7 years without really trying. It's priceless. It will save you tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars in interest over your lifetime. Bill, thank you so much and good luck on the books. And we will talk with you again.
Thank you, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.